Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm Dr. Caroline Leaf, and welcome to my podcast, Cleaning Up the Mental Mess. Dealing with any chronic illness is going to have a mental toll, and Lyme disease, which has physical, mental, and neurological symptoms, is high on this list, made so much more difficult because society still does not give the threat of chronic Lyme and other tick-borne illnesses the recognition, treatment, funding for research, or healthcare coverage it so desperately needs. Today on the podcast, I talk to Lindsay Keys to discuss living with chronic Lyme disease and also to shed light on the mental health toll that Lyme disease has. We discuss her story, what Lyme is, how to identify and treat it, and her documentary that she's taken before Congress to give voice and platform to the need for research and better healthcare in terms of Lyme disease. Let's dive right in. Well, everyone, I'm so pleased to have Lindsay Keys with me today. And we're going to be talking about a really serious topic that just does not get enough attention. It's something that's really close to my heart. We're going to be talking about Lyme disease, what it is, how it's so underfunded, under-researched, badly handled by the medical system. And it's very close to my heart because when I was only 8 years old, I had tick bite fever. They called it tick bite fever then. And I was sick for weeks and months. And one of my children has been battling with it for years, one of my nephews. And just to try and get treatment and the thousands of dollars, Lindsay, that we've had to spend outside of the insurance system to just get it identified and treated is crazy. So welcome, Lindsay. I'm very, very excited to talk to you and hear your story and talk about the mental health aspects of Lyme disease, because there are plenty serious ones, including things like suicidal thoughts and so on. So welcome today to share your wonderful expertise that you have and personal experience.
Thank you so much. I'm so grateful to be here. And yeah, it's a challenging topic, but I think talking about it is very important. And it's good to know that this disease can be avoided. And if you're going through it, there is hope as well. And so I'm excited to share all of it. I'm a totally open book.
That's wonderful. And I'm so glad we're going to share the hope, because it's one of those things that I know when I was sick with it, that they just antibiotic after, and I just got sicker with everything and eventually landed up being in bed for like 3 months as an 8 year old, which was terrible. Even getting rheumatic fever and that kind of thing. And it was just terrible. So there's so many, there is hope. And that's what we can talk about as well. Okay. So Lindsay, let's tell your story. You actually moved to Joshua Tree to get away from the land of ticks, although ticks are everywhere. And now you're back in New York State and back in the land of ticks, as you were saying to me before. I found that funny. I've never heard the New York State being described as the land of ticks. So tell us, you know, where did this whole thing start? Cause I know your story, but just to orientate my readers, you're going to get the full story, but cause you first discovered you had this unknown illness when you were a student, and it took years, and then you ended up making an amazing documentary, which we're going to talk about. And so tell us your story and how you got to the documentary, and then we can unpack all the details that we need to help people.
Yeah. So the story is long and winding. And it was actually while making The Quiet Epidemic that I started to piece together this mystery that was my entire life up until that point. Mm. So my co-director and I, we would be out with our cameras filming doctors and at, you know, conferences and whatnot, learning about the illness. We were going on this investigation, and I was just having so many aha moments. And it was very challenging to realize that I had actually, I think, first become infected as early as third grade.
Wow.
So I was diagnosed with mono in third grade because the doctors didn't know what else to call it.
Gosh.
And I remember them being baffled. And I remember thinking how strange and scary that was to be a child and to be so sick and to have all the doctors just kind of shrugging their shoulders and not knowing what to call it. So they just kind of, it's almost like they just drew a name out of a bag or something. Like, oh, okay, it's mono because you have some mono symptoms. But I was very high functioning. I was an athlete. I was a top student. I remember feeling tired a lot, but I just thought, I don't know. I guess I'm tired a lot. You just explain things away, especially when you're a child and that's your normal and you don't really remember what it's like, or maybe you never knew what it was like to be healthy. And I actually had a bullseye rash in high school. And that was the first time I heard Lyme disease. I was walking around with this bullseye rash on my collarbone for a long time. And no one even mentioned it. It was somebody at a barbecue who said, that looks like Lyme disease.
And, oh my gosh.
And this was in rural upstate New York. Okay. This is in the heart of the epidemic. And even still, no one was talking about it. I'd never heard of ticks. I had never been told to check for ticks. There was no mentioning of it at school. Or, you know, I was out playing in the fields for sports. Nobody ever talked about ticks. But I was actually treated then because I had the bullseye rash. And you're lucky if you have the rash.
Yeah, because it doesn't always show up.
It doesn't. So one of the very first studies on Lyme disease on the people who were first diagnosed with quote unquote Lyme disease and Lyme disease in Lyme, Connecticut, only a quarter of them had the bullseye rash. And it's just amazing that's become the sign.
Gosh.
Because in the earliest cohort of patients, it wasn't even the majority of them who displayed
had the bullseye rash.
Yeah. So I was lucky to have had that rash. I got treated. And again, I was relatively okay. But then I started to feel kind of achy in my arms. And I used to joke that I could tell when a storm was coming, because my arms would be throbbing. And I remember sitting in math class as a high school student and feeling my arms aching. And I thought, huh, weird. I don't know. You know, you just don't know. And you just, again, it becomes your normal. College is when everything changed. The stress of being a college student, I was going through a lot at the time, a lot of emotional stress. And I think that's definitely an important point.
Huge.
100%. Yeah. So I think all of the infections that my body had been handling and keeping at bay, with the onset of a pretty severe emotional stressor, everything just started to spiral. I had so many bizarre symptoms, chronic throat infections. They just kept coming back. Fevers. I remember just shivering in my college dorm room and I could barely take care of myself. And I had intestinal issues. I had a full body rash that broke out and I had all of these symptoms and no one knew what to call it.
And mental health symptoms as well.
Not at that point. Yeah. So it was mostly just physical, which was awful enough.
Oh gosh.
But
yeah.
Basically the doctors, I was in various ER rooms over the course of that semester and I had some surgeries done. They were like, well, let's just cut out the things that are bothering you.
Oh gosh.
No one was talking about the root cause.
What did they do? What surgeries were they doing?
I had a tonsillectomy. So they removed my tonsils and my adenoids. And then I had broken my nose a few times growing up and they thought, well, maybe it's because your nose is broken. So they, you know, gave me I think it was called a septoplasty where they carved out my nasal passages.
Jeez.
It was all of these like really gnarly surgeries.
Shame.
And I was so young. And again, there was no consideration of Lyme disease in the picture, despite me going to college in Connecticut. I was a photography major. I was constantly in the woods. I was photographing my friends and, you know, in the grass and in the woods. And I actually photographed my boyfriend at the time in Lyme, Connecticut.
Oh,
and we
gosh.
Were in these fields. And I thought, where is everybody? These fields are so beautiful.
Why is no one out here? Oh.
Yeah. I picked a tick off of his bat.
Oh gosh.
That night. And it was my first time ever seeing one. And I flicked it into my garbage can. Because
oh
I had
gosh.
No idea.
What
I had
it was.
No idea. Yeah. And so again, then there were years of better health and I was I certainly reinfected while living on Martha's Vineyard after college. And that's when it was like, okay, Lyme started to come up in the conversation. And my mom was spiraling with Lyme disease at the time.
Oh, gosh.
She was the one who really helped me figure things out. She was saying, Lindsay, it sounds like you have Lyme disease. I had tingling, numbness. I couldn't turn my head. I was bedridden. I was so sick. And Lyme disease is rampant on Martha's Vineyard.
Wow.
And I did not know that before living there. And eventually I was treated with a short course of antibiotics and I recovered for about a year. And then that's when everything really fell apart. So you see, it's almost like this, I was on this roller coaster ride my whole life. And it was like, I was sick and then I was well and I was sick and well. And, but each time I got sick, I was sicker.
Worse. Okay. More symptoms.
And then in 2015, that's when I basically over the course of a week, developed what people would call schizophrenia, early onset dementia, multiple sclerosis, and I don't know, maybe throw in like, you know, arthritis.
Bipolar or something as well.
Bipolar. Yeah. I mean, all of
it. You had everything. Oh gosh,
everything.
That's terrible.
And it was terrifying because I knew that I could not go to just any doctor because I knew that there would not be an exploration of the root cause of my symptoms and that I would just be locked away in a psych ward.
Medicated till the cows came home. Yeah,
exactly. And I would never get out. And so that's when, you know, my mom at that point, she'd been so frustrated with me telling me, you're not cured. You're not cured of Lyme. Like this is what happens. And there's a controversy and she's telling me all of this stuff. And it was so hard for me to believe. I didn't want to believe it, but then suddenly my life depended on it.
Oh, yeah.
And I resisted going to the doctor despite feeling like my brain had been hijacked by an actual demon.
Oh,
I was actually Googling one point. I was Googling demonic possession.
Oh, shame.
Because I didn't, that's literally what it felt like.
Felt like, yeah.
I felt like something had taken over my brain. And I was completely aware of it and I had no control over it and I wanted it out. I wanted to be myself. I wanted to live. And this compulsion took over me that was just, it was compelling me all day, every day. This lasted for 6 months. Okay. Oh, all day, every day. 6 months, every second, it was compelling me to kill myself.
Shame.
And I had no reference point for this. I didn't know that anything like this could happen to a person.
And it just suddenly happened. It happened in that time.
I woke up. It was overnight.
Wow.
It was literally overnight. And the onset was an emotional stressor again. I was upset about my mom. It's so ironic because I was so upset about my mom's situation.
Yeah.
Her having Lyme, she was on the verge of declaring bankruptcy because Lyme disease is not covered by insurance.
And it's thousands of dollars. Yeah.
I mean, she had maxed out her credit cards to pay for life-saving treatment because the insurance companies don't want to pay for it. And I thought my mom's going to die and I can't save her. And I was crying a lot. And the more I cried, the worse my symptoms got. It was just like this. And then, it was literally overnight that all of a sudden it almost felt like the illness, the disease had been in me and it was like waking up. It was almost like I could feel it waking up inside my body and for the first time in my brain. And I had never experienced that before.
Lindsay, can I stop you for 1 second just to emphasize what you've just said? Because that's one of the things that's a hallmark of Lyme. Is it doesn't really ever go away, but it lodges and it hides and then certain things will activate it and it moves through the body. And so, you know, those symptoms that you're experiencing and also they accumulate. So it doesn't necessarily have to get into the brain. And I know you know this. I'm just saying this for the listeners.
100%,
and please add to it. But once it gets into, it accumulates. So as it gets more and more active and alive and growing more and it goes into dormancy, when it comes out of dormancy, it generally has spread. And those cumulative effects of the mental health challenges and that, you know, the suicidal thoughts and that kind of thing are different for every person, but those are very much part of it. There's so many psychiatric symptoms that are associated with it. So I just wanted to, please carry on. I just wanted to emphasize
that. That's such a good point. It's an important point. It's a stealthy infection. It hides. It can go dormant. And it's not the only disease that can do that. Lyme disease is very closely related to syphilis.
Yeah.
Right. And it's called syphilis was called the great imitator. And after Lyme disease was first discovered, scientists were actually referring to it as the new great imitator because it's so similar. And yet in the decades since it's been first named and discovered, that conversation around Lyme disease just kind of went radio silent. You don't really hear about it from the public health agencies that an infection can cause mental illness and that it can be treated.
Yeah.
And that's a really important point for me to make. People are asking me all the time, like, well, how are you now? They're almost afraid to ask. And once I got to a doctor who understood the nature of these infections, and I think it's important to note that it is infections. Lyme disease is one of more than 20 pathogens that have been identified in ticks. And that's something that I learned the hard way by becoming infected with a bunch of them.
That's right. And there's different ones in different countries and different states. And there's all these different types and some respond to certain things and some don't respond to others. So I just want to emphasize that people, it's a tick, but there's lots of pathogens that the tick actually carries and can put into your body. And not all of them will manifest, but some or clusters of them will manifest. Did I explain that?
Okay. Yes. Yeah. I love how educated you are on this. And I'm so sorry that you have had to become educated on this. It's such a scary world to enter, but this knowledge is life saving. And so it's so important to know. And it's so much easier to grasp before you're sick, right?
Exactly.
I mean, if we had known this, you know, years before falling ill, I mean, in your case, you were a child me too, right? What can we do about it? But I think about the kids who are suffering now. And if I were a parent, I would really want to know all of this so that I could look out for the signs and the symptoms.
Absolutely.
Right?
You're quite right. If I think of it, my sister's son also, that's actually four people in my immediate family that got it when they were quite young. My youngest daughter got it when she was much older. But if I just think back to the days of, I mean, I'm 60, I was eight. It's a long time ago that they identified that as 52 years ago. But I got so sick with rheumatic fever and various other sicknesses that the way that they collectively treated everything, that seemed to knock it out of my body because I didn't have lingering symptoms after that. I still have the mark where the tick bit me. All these years later, I still have a whole bump where you can actually see the bump from the tick bite fever. But, you know, I think it was lucky that all the other medications I were on from the rheumatic fever, which I think was, all of it was related. I'm pretty certain to tonsillitis. I shed my tonsils out. They did all of that. But it was such an intensive treatment for over sort of a 3-month period that I think I was lucky. Whatever they did, managed to control it. But my family members were not as lucky. It took so much longer. And I know my nephew now is still battling like crazy to manage it.
Yeah. And I think that can be confusing for some people, especially people who are skeptical of the severity of Lyme disease. Why do some people do well with the treatment and it seems to work for them and other people don't? And I think it's just, you know, now we're seeing with COVID, for example, and long COVID, infections impact all people differently. It's not just this narrow manifestation that every person's, you know, genetics and their environmental factors are going to perfectly interplay with. It just doesn't work that way. So I think it is important to note that, for some people, especially if you get treated early, the earlier the treatment, the better chance you have of improving. And I think, for hopefully, you know, for those who have a stronger immune system in general, then of course they're going to have a better chance of fighting it off. And some of us aren't as lucky. Some of us were born with weakened immune systems. Some of us are exposed to things like toxic mold and other environmental toxins that can weaken our immune system. And so everybody handles Lyme disease and tick-borne diseases differently. But I was actually lucky in that once I got the treatment, I actually responded to it fairly quickly for some of the symptoms, for the scariest ones. all of the psychiatric manifestations that I was experiencing within a couple of months of treatment were gone.
That's amazing. Wow.
And that is so important because I think about how many people are out there living with these lifelong, what they believe to be
lifelong
diagnoses, right?
Which is wrong anyway, which is unscientific anyway.
Of course.
So it's just shocking.
It is shocking, right? And many of them children. I have so many, I have friends and I know people who are going through this now who were in or are in psychiatric wards, just like I would have been had I gone to the wrong doctor. I wouldn't have made it out. I wouldn't be alive talking to you right now if I hadn't gotten to the doctors I had gone to because I didn't think that I could survive one more second.
Oh, shame. I'm so sorry.
With that feeling that was in my brain, I was like, every night I was going to bed like, oh, please, this has to be gone. This has to be gone by tomorrow morning. I can't do this. I can't deal with this.
Shame.
And then it would be there. But after a few months of treatment, all of those symptoms went away. And then it was a matter of peeling back all of these other layers. And I did so many treatments and we could talk about them if you're interested.
I want to say that, please. I know that I can almost feel my listeners and viewers saying, okay, so what are the symptoms and what are the treatments and what worked for you and what are the combinations? And
totally.
So, you know, if you don't mind, let's just transition there. We can come back. Let's transition to, you know, what are the treatments and what are the tests that people need to go for? And how does the whole thing work? And let's just do this in a nice organized way. Maybe I know you've spoken a bit about the symptoms, but let's talk about the symptoms, physical and mental, just summarize them. And then let's talk about the treatment options.
Okay.
And then, you know, the time involved in that.
Totally. Okay.
And maybe just touch on maybe the medical system, the fact that this is not covered by health insurance, and that's why you've done the documentary. So we're going to transition over to that. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Sounds good. Okay. So the symptoms are different for every person. That's why this is so challenging. However, there are some hallmark symptoms. So if you have the flu in the summer, in the height of tick season, right? Fevers, chills, headaches. That's something to consider. You know, the flu season usually isn't in May or June or July. So that's something to keep an eye out for. But also, you know, migratory joint pain that moves around your body from, you know, your elbow to your knee. You can actually feel it kind of, you know, it's moving. It's so bizarre. Tingling, numbness, you know, neurological symptoms, aching hands. My hands and my arms used to ache. It kind of progresses from like, you know, this is an overgeneralization, of course, but it sort of progresses from flu-like symptoms to arthritic symptoms to neurologic symptoms.
That's very good description.
And so it moves through these different stages. As it moves into your nervous system, that would suggest that it's in the later stage. You want to catch it immediately, but what's challenging is that there's no currently available diagnostic test to detect it immediately.
No.
And the test also has a hard time detecting it later on because it's an antibody test. And so maybe your body hasn't generated enough antibodies, or maybe Lyme disease bacteria has been in your system for so long that it's actually suppressing your antibody production. And then you're not going to light up, you know, the test as a positive. So the test is a big part of this picture. There is a test that is more sensitive. It's called the IGENEX test, IGENEX test, but most medical professionals will not recognize it as a legitimate test, and it's not covered by insurance.
And it's very expensive.
It's very expensive. I had to live at home with my mom and sleep on her couch for 2 years to afford not just the testing, but the initial doctor's appointments. And I mean, these doctors spend hours with you because it's complicated, and that's part of why the insurance companies are denying this. Because they have chosen to only cover appointments that are, you know, 15, 20 minutes at most. How do you tackle a complex illness or a host of complex illnesses in 15 to 20 minutes?
You can't.
It's not possible. Right. So that's the really unfortunate aspect of this disease. And that's part of what, you know, prompted the making of the Quiet Epidemic was watching Lyme disease bankrupt my own mother and watching it bankrupt so many people around me. People are losing their homes. People are living in their cars. And no one knows that this happens until it happens to them because we're not hearing about it from our health our health agencies. And that's unacceptable.
No, it's unacceptable.
So those are the symptoms. That's the kind of insurance debacle side of this.
Sorry, with the symptoms though, so it's the fevers in non-flu season.
Yeah.
High tick season.
That's also start in flu season, it's more obvious, I should say, if it's not during flu season.
Okay. And then it's the joint pain, but it seems to be moving. I remember my hands being sore. I remember as a child doing this with my hands and my daughter doing this and having to massage. But as it travels through the body and then also the neurological symptoms where the fogginess, brain fogginess, concentration, tiredness, lethargy, psychiatric symptoms, not being able to get out of
OCD,
bed,
OCD symptoms, depression,
a lot of depression,
anxiety,
big time.
Schizophrenia, all of it. I mean, imagine
all those scary descriptions.
Very, very scary. And, you know, someone who's really, really worth looking into, and he would actually be an excellent guest on this podcast, is Dr. Brian Fallon at Columbia University.
Okay. I will
His specialty
up.
Is what he's the head of the, he's the director of the tick-borne disease research center there at Columbia. But his personal specialty is Lyme and its impact on mental health.
Okay.
So he published an article in 2021 in the American Journal of Psychiatry that showed that people with Lyme were, I think, around 28% more likely to develop mental disorders than people without Lyme. And they were twice as likely to attempt committing suicide.
Oh gosh.
Than healthy people. Okay. So this is
serious.
This is a really huge burden.
Yeah.
It's so serious. The fact that doctors are not able to really properly screen for this because the test doesn't work. And that it's just not in there. It's just, you know, the medical school education, system. The curriculum is so far behind on this. I have friends who are doctors who have seen what I've gone through and they've watched The Quiet Epidemic and they reflect on what their medical school education was on Lyme disease. And maybe it was a couple paragraphs. Look for the bullseye rash and run the ELISA and the Western blot, which like isn't accurate. That's about it. But
like
that said, checking for a bullseye rash is still valuable. And although, you know, it's not super common, it still is a symptom. And I think the most important thing that people can do is to be tick aware and to do tick checks. Because if you see a tick on you or your child or your pet, and then you notice that they start to act funny, that's data. And to get even more data, what you can do is save the tick and then send it away to be tested. There's a website called tickreport.com.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's a lab at, I think it's UMass Amherst, and they test for Lyme and other pathogens. So that's good to know
as well. That's fantastic. That's really good advice. Okay. So you've identified symptoms as far as possible.
Yeah.
And then that's great news to know that if you identify the tick, you can send it away. We'll put that link. If you could send us that, we'll put that in the show notes.
Definitely.
Then in terms of, I know there's the Lyme Disease Society or Association, and there's a whole lot of body of doctors that are involved with that. Did you, because there you can find maybe a doctor in your own region, or do you have a link or somewhere that people can find doctors that are
literate?
Lyme, yes.
Who would have thought that was a whole world, right?
No, it is. Because we actually connected with the head of the association, Lyme Disease Association. So I'll put that in this link too. But I'm interested to see how did you find your network of doctors?
I found my doctor because of my mom. And this is what's wild. People say it, and it's true that Lyme is a word of mouth diagnosis, because most people who get diagnosed don't hear about it from their doctor. Most doctors don't really want to get involved. It's controversial. The Quiet Epidemic explains why that is, how it came to be that way. But there's been a lot of debating over the nature of the illness. And this is why the work that we're doing now with the Quiet Epidemic, and, you know, we're launching a global movement.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah. To demand the full recognition of the spectrum of manifestations of Lyme disease, not just the acute stage, but the full range of what it means to have Lyme disease, tick-borne illness, and really demand that we have accurate diagnostics and effective therapies immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Not someday.
No.
This should have happened decades ago, and we have a lot of catching up to do. So we're actually going to Congress in a couple of
weeks. Fantastic. I saw that. Yeah. Congratulations. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really an important thing because there's just so much suffering. People are, yes, killing themselves. They're declaring bankruptcy and children are losing their childhoods. And we should and could have the tools to figure this out if the research funding was prioritized on par with the scale of suffering.
Exactly. If you take some of the money that's being spent on very, very misspent on the psychiatric field, chasing after theories that have been disproved for such a long time, and channeled those billions into part of those, some of those billions into that Lyme disease research, we would see a massive reduction in psychiatric problems.
Absolutely.
Needs to be. So I'm sure you're going to talk about that when you go to Congress as
100%. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The amount of money that's being wasted, mm-hmm. healthcare dollars that are being wasted by not looking at the root cause. It's tough though, because pharmaceutical companies are making money off of the lifelong management.
Exactly.
And suppressing of symptoms. So it's like, we're in a pickle here because the insurance companies, you know, they don't want to pay for long-term treatment mm-hmm. for Lyme disease. And yet those patients who don't receive the treatment go on to have much more severe illnesses, which cost way more, right?
Exactly.
But then pharmaceutical companies are profiting off of people not getting diagnosed and treated early. So it's kind of a mess, but really we just have to reckon with the fact that we're living in a for-profit healthcare system. And that's the other part of this conversation that mm-hmm. we're igniting with the quiet epidemic is, you know, yes, the film is about Lyme disease. Our campaign is focused on Lyme disease, but Lyme disease is the canary in the coal mine.
Yeah.
There is so much more that is going on that is so wrong and so unnecessary. And people want to be well, and we need people to be well because our society is not going to be able to function.
No.
If future generations are being debilitated by tick bites. And
Exactly. I mean, there's just so many things there. Well, Lindsay, this is amazing. I don't want to bypass on the treatment side. And I want to come back to this discussion about the healthcare system, but let's, if you don't mind, let's just transition back to the treatment side, because that's really, I'm very interested to hear what your treatment protocol was and you know, what the options are for people.
Yeah. Well, I should first start by saying that every person is different and
individuality.
I don't know any two Lyme patients who have had the same treatment. So people ask me this question all the time and mm-hmm. I'm actually pretty reluctant to respond because some of them want to go follow beat by beat what Lindsay did to get better. And that's not how this works. So it's important to just share that up front. But what I some of these things sound completely bizarre. And I never imagined that I would do any of this. But when your life depends on it and the mainstream doesn't have any tools to offer you, you'll try literally anything.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Right? And so for me, you know, the first step, of course, was antibiotics. Mm-hmm. That was the most obvious place to start. Antibiotics were very intense. It was a collection of them. It wasn't just one. It was different antibiotics to treat the illness and the bacteria in its various stages, right? Because some of the bacteria go into what are called biofilms, where they're able to hide and kind of cloak themselves mm-hmm. from antibiotics. And they develop persisters where, you know, you treat the bacteria, but there's a root that's still there. And when the antibiotic is removed, the root grows back. And that's why it has sort of this relapsing, remitting rhythm to it. So I was on a host of antibiotics, rotating them, pulsing them. That was really intense. And the treatment often makes you feel worse. So you don't even know if it's helping or not, but you just have to go for it and just try.
Gosh. Yeah.
So the doctor would say, "How are you feeling today?" And I'm like, "What?
Terrible.
I feel awful. I feel way worse. Like this cannot be helping," but it did. It did help. So I stuck with it and I did that for almost a year. And then I actually made the call. I was like, you know what? I think I'm done with antibiotics. And I give my doctor credit. That's what's cool about, you know, a lot of these doctors who are in the trenches with chronically ill patients. It's more of a collaboration. They listen to the patients.
That's so good. So important.
It is. So you actually feel like you have some agency, and that's good because you need to feel empowered to get your health back, right? Mm-hmm. So you're a collaborator. So then I kind of just went off on my own. I then did a year of an herbal protocol called the Cowden protocol. Mm-hmm. And it was all of these tinctures. And I was that person with my little box of tinctures.
Yeah.
you know, excuse me for a moment. And, you know, just had it like on the hoods of cars, or this is all while filming the Quiet Epidemic. So it was really a wild process of trying to stay well and actively treat while traveling and filming. So
how did you, social, that must have been so hard. So you said that it was more of a neck and neck. What did you call that? Sorry, that treatment protocol after the antibiotics, the tinctures.
It's
like a
it's an herbal protocol. The specific protocol I did is called the Cowden protocol, Cowden, Cowden.
Yeah.
And it was developed by a doctor. His last name is Cowden, and he has experience treating patients with Lyme and tick-borne illness. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that made a difference. And then I completed that, but you know, I still wasn't myself, and I still wasn't better. And so then at that point, this is where things get even more bizarre. Mm-hmm. I had heard about bee venom therapy. I had heard about people with Lyme disease and multiple sclerosis and other illnesses doing a type of therapy that involves stinging yourself with live bees.
Wow, I've heard about this. Yeah.
Yeah. And I heard some miraculous stories of people who were fully bedridden, completely disabled, totally taken out of society, getting their health back through bee venom. And there is some research starting to be done on that. And I did that for a year and a half, and that helped.
Wow.
And then I, you know, along the way, there's lower hanging fruit, like avoiding refined sugar, gluten, dairy. I cleaned up my diet. I stopped drinking alcohol.
That's a big one, isn't it? The alcohol.
Oh, it's huge.
Can you speak for a moment about that?
Alcohol. Actually, you know what? One of the doctors in our film, he says that a sign to look out for of maybe having Lyme disease is if suddenly your hangovers get really bad. And it's actually true. Like my body had an increasingly difficult time processing alcohol. And so if I just had to totally cut it out, it wasn't worth it anymore. I felt awful. So that's low hanging fruit. If you don't feel well, take care of what you can. You know, it's there. It's a choice. And I just did it cold turkey because again, I was like thinking I'm going to die and I wanted so badly to live. So I did everything that I possibly could. Yoga saved me. I did yoga every morning, even though I was in so much pain. My joints, my body hurt so
badly.
But it helped
so much. Yeah,
it did. I was as strong as I'd ever been. Mm. Like I was very strong, and it didn't make any sense because my body was falling apart, but my muscles were there, and that helped me get through, I think.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Lolly Focus Pops or Lolly Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Have you been on the hunt for a new doctor and you ask literally everyone you know for their recommendation? You know, a doctor who actually gets you, listens to you, and makes you feel super comfortable. And finally, after weeks of searching, you find the one. Not only do they do all of that, but they're close by. So you call their office and they have an appointment available, but then the receptionist tells you this perfect doctor doesn't take your insurance. Wipe your tears, put away the ice cream, and head over to ZocDoc to find and book the doctor who is right for you and takes your insurance. ZocDoc is a free app where you can find amazing doctors and book appointments online. We are talking about booking appointments with thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed doctors and specialists. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat almost any condition you're searching for. These docs all have verified reviews from actual real patients, not bots. And the typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between 24 and 72 hours. That's it. You can even score same-day appointments. Once you find the doc you want, you can book him immediately with just a few app taps. No more waiting awkwardly on hold with a receptionist. I love using ZocDoc, especially when traveling or when I'm in a new city. In fact, my whole family uses the app. My daughter managed to find a new gynecologist the same day she found out she was pregnant on ZocDoc. Go to ZocDoc.com/leaf and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc zocdoc.com/leaf, zocdoc.com/leaf. The link and details will be in the show notes. Well, there's so much that happens with yoga, as we know, in terms of, you know, that what it moved from the word yoga, just the fact that you're moving your body in that way and it's stimulating the bone. It's right down to the marrow of the bones and the blood flow and the oxygen. And these are all things that can help to increase immune defenses and so on. And yeah, so that's, sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you there, but I love hearing what you say.
Yeah. Yeah. Yoga was huge. And I mean, what actually really saved me when I was totally spiraling, when I was having the compulsive suicidal thoughts, and I would journal every night because
amazing.
I was actually losing my grip on who I was. I was forgetting who I was. I was forgetting, I couldn't get home from work. I was forgetting everything. I couldn't remember my phone number. I couldn't even, it was almost like I was drifting away from my reality. Yeah. And it's so
disassociating
hard
a little bit as well.
Oh, I mean, full blown, like
that's
derealization.
Big, yeah. That's a big blown symptom.
Oh, it was so terrifying.
Scary.
And so
the
I would write.
Grounded
I was journaling. It's funny. I'm actually now running a virtual writing group called Pressure Release.
Oh, I love
that. Where I hold space for people who, you know, are just, you know, going through life and maybe would benefit from like having a virtual community and just people there to write alongside.
Oh,
it saved
beautiful.
My life.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I really did. And it wasn't about writing anything to be published or writing anything that would be great.
Just to get that.
Yeah.
To anchor you back and to help with that derealization, the disassociation, the finding who you were, the reminding of your narrative. So like pulling together of your soul kind of thing.
Exactly. I was writing simple things like, my name is Lindsay Keys. Mm. I was born in 1989. Like simple things. It was whatever I could. Like you said, anchor is the perfect word. Mm-hmm. I was just trying so hard to hold on to this little tether.
Shame.
You know, this little tether. So yeah, all of these tools have been so important. Infrared sauna for detoxing.
Oh, every day I have a sauna here. My daughter's going in it.
That's huge. Mm-hmm. And you know what's sad is that a lot of people who are chronically ill, and I'm sure you've experienced this, people look at you like you're kind of weird, or they'll even mock you or make fun of you for trying these wacky things. And it's like, listen, if the research had been prioritized for the past 50 years since Lyme had been discovered, and we had a sweet little pill that you could take and it would cure me, sign me up. I would have loved that.
Exactly. But it doesn't work like that. And even, you know, even with the research, but that it would have made, it's because it's such a complex disease, as all diseases are, and we don't really understand, you know, the full biochemistry, although we know so much more about the brain and the body. So the research is needed to explain why these combinations of protocols work. You know, I've been fortunate, as I said, that I didn't have lingering symptoms, but my youngest daughter, my son, both my nephews, they have really battled, especially the one nephew. It's been like 10, sort of 6-7 years of his life that has been affected.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, everyone that tells me they've had Lyme disease or anything, I always say, so get into that infrared sauna. It makes a massive difference. The bee venom. I mean, I'm thrilled to hear you talk about that. Not that I've tried that, but I know people who have. But beeswax, I swear by that stuff. You know, and it's not bee venom, but it's beeswax. There's something inside the beeswax for healing things. It's like insane. And so there's, you know, it's, and you don't want to just try. We're not advocating here. Lindsay and I are not advocating a hodgepodge, whatever. But it's, you know, there's, with something, there are certain things that infrared saunas have had research. Bee venom has had research.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Eventually all of it does come together.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're saying is that you're not saying that there's one protocol. You're talking about bio-individuality. And
exactly.
The fact is that, you know, we're in a day and an age where the more knowledge we have as an individual that we can go to the doctors with and say, these are my symptoms. This is what I'd like to try. Can you help me put this together? You know, a lot of doctors are very open to that because they don't have time to research every single thing about every single thing. But if you can go, hey, I found this paper on bee venom and how this helps with potentially this protocol helps with, because that herbal protocol, my daughter didn't do that one. She did another one, but it helped to a certain extent. But all the things, as you said, eventually all add up and get you to a place. But the thing with Lyme disease that is always quite, and I don't know if you've experienced this with your mom and yourself, is that it'll go through these, and you said it already, the periods where you go in remission. And then something, and you think, this is under control. And then suddenly something happens or you're exposed to something. in the environment. And that just throws you back to like square one again.
Yeah.
Has that happened? Has that happened to you?
Yeah, that actually just recently happened to me. And I haven't even really been talking about this much. This is like my first time publicly sharing this, and I'm okay, but I got COVID again.
Oh, I'm sorry.
For I think the fifth or sixth time at this point. And again, I'm immunocompromised because of Lyme disease, right? So my immune system isn't as strong as others. And so I don't feel like I'm back at square one by any means.
That's great.
But I don't feel great right now. Like I was, if you had asked me a couple of months ago how I was feeling, I'd be like, I'm cured. I'm amazing. Everything's great. And right now I'm sort of like, I need to figure out how to clear this fog that I'm in. I'm like in a total fog.
Oh, I'm so COVID. Sorry.
And I think that the research that's being done, for example, at Mount Sinai by Dr. David Petrino, he's an amazing researcher at Mount Sinai. He is looking at the infectious root of chronic illnesses, chronic Lyme being one of them, long COVID, multiple sclerosis, myalgic encephalomyelitis, CFS, and Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And I think, you know, it's a curious thing that a lot of people with chronic Lyme and long COVID have very similar symptoms. And I think the research funding for both of those illnesses should absolutely be cross-pollinating and helping figure out what's going on, you know. And chronic Lyme has been neglected for decades, and now all of this money is being poured into long COVID. So I'm really hoping that some of that research will trickle over into helping us out on the chronic Lyme side. Or maybe there's not even a side. Maybe it's like a similar dysregulation.
Two parts of the same protocol, perhaps. Or
absolutely.
It's one research study looking at two different elements sort of thing.
Totally.
Yeah.
And the one more thing that I really want to mention as far as like the treatment side of things, which is a kind of sensitive topic, but I think it's really important. So in the Lyme disease community, a lot of people are told that they're faking it, that they're imagining their illness. It's awful, right? And really, it's just that we don't have a test that works.
Yeah.
And kids
they can't put their finger on it, but it's...
You just must be imagining it. Or, yeah, as Julia, the main subject of our film, she was told that she was faking it. And we include the audio recording of her as an 11-year-old child pleading with the doctor to just help her figure it out because she wasn't faking it. And so there is a mental aspect to having Lyme disease, mental illness, everything else. And it's not that you're faking it, but it's that it's a very traumatic experience to go through a chronic illness emotionally and physically, right? So the nervous system dysregulation is a huge piece of this. And that would make sense as far as the emotional triggers triggering a physical reaction, right? So
absolutely.
Your nervous system goes haywire. What follows? Your immune system goes haywire. And then the symptoms start to show up, or the illness manifests for the first time. And something that I've been spending time with, and a lot of people in the chronic Lyme community and chronic illness community have been spending time doing, is neural retraining programs. So there are programs like Primal Trust or DNRS or ReOrigin. These are all different programs where you're actually spending time retraining your brain and trying to really balance and heal your nervous system. And as you heal your nervous system, hopefully the immune system follows suit.
Well, it definitely, I can tell you now thank you for sharing that. I'm so excited. I didn't mean to jump it so quickly, but I got so excited because I'm a psychoneurobiologist. We publish and do research on the whole mind-body connection. And I have the system called the neurocycle, which is basically, it's based on the neuroplasticity research I did 40 years ago, some of the first in the field. And
rewire
the psychoneurobiological network. And it's basically your mind is driving everything that's going on in your body.
Yes.
So your immune system responds immediately to your mind. So as we have to deal with the virus, obviously, and the pathogens and all the impact and everything, but your mind is what's making the efficiency of all of that work more efficient, work, because your mind drives your mental functioning as well as your neurophysiological functioning.
Exactly.
So although people on this podcast hear me talk a lot about all the time about how we can learn to manage our mind, and the neurocycle is a system for how information, how life gets into us, builds in a network and drives us. And that, and your immune system and your brain and your body do not distinguish between a pathogen like a tick bite fever or like, you know, the pathogens from that can come from a tick and a psychological trauma and the psychological trauma that is part of the chronic illness. So it's all intertwined. So your immune system is responding to everything. And if your immune system is constantly in hyperactive mode, it's hyperimmune, there's a direct, by using our mind, you are calming down the entire system of the body. You're rewiring networks, activating resilience and improving immune function. So it's not just some pie in the sky, maybe link. It is an actual link.
Yeah.
And it should be like I would say it would be the first line of any treatment for anyone with any kind of chronic illness is to get your mind stronger and healing, and because your mind is putting energy into the brain and the body. Without your mind, you're dead. So if your mind is getting healed, your mind automatically is healing the networks of the brain and the body, increasing resistance and helping to fight the pathogen. I'm not saying the neurocycle is going to eliminate Lyme disease. I am not saying that. I haven't done any research in that line. What I'm saying is that I do know that if you use the neurocycle, which is basically retraining the networks of your mind-brain-body network, you are going to increase and activate the natural resilience inside of you, improve cell health, improve DNA health, improve every second of the day you're making 800,000 to a million new cells, and the quality of those determine the quality of your entire body and the strength of your immune system to fight pathogens. So by using the neurocycle, you're influencing that. So you're going to the core and you're driving it in the right direction. So I would say it's a really huge part. So I'm really glad you mentioned about the mind aspect, and that needs to be a massive part, because as you've said so clearly, I'm so glad you've mentioned this, the suicide, the psychiatric symptoms. I'm glad that towards the end of this podcast, you have this interview, you've brought up the mental side, the mental aspect as well, because it's massive. As you know, when your mind is all over the place and you feel suicidal every minute of the day and you're depressed and you can't get out, it's awful. You don't want to live. Yeah. And if there's hope, which is what you're providing,
yes.
You know, this is really great. So in our wrap up minutes over here, would you mind just telling us about your fantastic documentary, The Silent Epidemic, where people can get hold of it, where they can watch it, what they can do to support you.
Great. Yeah. Thank you for sharing all of that, by the way. That's so cool. That's like a big part of your world. And I am so excited to share your program with the Lyme community, because they're always looking for something to try.
I'll send you a link to the neurocycle. We'll set you up on the neurocycle.
Okay.
And you can try
amazing.
It out.
Oh, that would be amazing. So yeah, The Quiet Epidemic is available on Amazon Prime Video, Apple TV, iTunes, and Vimeo on demand. And I mean,
it's been seven years making the film
and then touring it. Mm. And the film is powerful because, yes, it's in part investigative. We get into the insurance side of mm-hmm. things. We get into, pharmaceutical industry conflicts of interests and certain powers that be that have, seemingly obstructed the evolution of science.
And so good. Mm-hmm. That's important knowledge.
It's so important. And again, there's no way that this is only happening in Lyme disease, right?
No, it's happening across the board. Yeah.
Exactly, which but there are also very human stories that are interwoven mm-hmm. with the research and the evidence that we lay out. And our main subjects are really amazing people. And I think that they are beacons of hope for any person, whether they have Lyme or mental illness, or even if they're perfectly healthy, but they're just going through the hard things that happen in life. Mm-hmm. So it's really a story about people who are not giving up. And it's a story about people who, having gone through a really hard time, find meaning and purpose in helping others.
Mm.
And I think that is what helped me get better.
That's amazing.
Right? And it's certainly what I've seen help the people in our film and the people in the Lyme community and just the people in my life. Having a purpose is everything. The way that the film started, here we go. We'll end with the very beginning.
Okay,
right?
I love that. I love
my
that.
My very first appointment. Now that everyone's heard what a hot mess I was,
We all hot messes, by the way.
Mess. I was a real mess, right? Mm-hmm. Barely alive. physically, shame, mentally, emotionally, financially, completely drained. My only shame, parent declaring bankruptcy from Lyme. Oh. I was like, what do I do? What do I do? So I go into this Lyme specialist's office, my first appointment, and the nurse, she was amazing. She said, how are you going to get through this? Do you have a passion?
Oh my goodness.
And she said, we find that patients at our clinic who have a purpose tend to have better outcomes. And of course, there's no science backing that up, right?
There
but
is.
That's what they
there
see.
Actually
oh, is there?
Is. There is.
Is there? Oh
there
my God, I want to see that. That's going to help my case. Yeah. You've just helped me out. Because people are like, oh, really? Where's the proof of that? And I'm like, you know what? That's what sometimes anecdotal evidence is just as valuable. And that should be what's driving the research, right? So what she was seeing in their clinic was the people who had a will to live. They had a purpose. They had a passion. They tended to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told her in that moment, I'm going to make a documentary about Lyme. I had no idea how I was going to do it or who I was going to do it with. But she looked really excited. And she said, we have another patient here who's your age, and he's a filmmaker also with Lyme disease. Do you want me to connect the two of you?
Oh, that's right. That's your
And that's my co-director.
That's your oh my gosh. That's
so
your story.
Having a
that's
passion,
beautiful.
Having a passion saved my life.
Wow.
It led to the creation of the film. And I think that that's maybe my most hopeful message is that if you can find a passion, if you can find a purpose, a will to live, something to that gets you really excited and offers meaning for your life, then miracles can happen.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I mean, I can't even say any more. You said it all. That's just amazing. Thank you. Thank you, Lindsay, for sharing your story. I really am so honored and to have heard it. And I support you 100% in your journey to taking this to Congress and, you know, fighting for people that have battled so much with something that they shouldn't have to. It's hard enough anyway, but to have a system that's fighting against you on top
exactly.
of it. You want the system on your side. So if you can make a difference, and I know you're going to make a difference in so many people's lives with your with your movie, and people need to get their hands on it. We'll put all the links in the show notes. Is there anywhere else people can get hold of you, follow you, support you?
Yeah, so watching the film is one way to get involved. But then, of course, following us on social media, The Quiet Epidemic. We're most active on Instagram, but we do have a Facebook page, and we have a newsletter sign up through our website, thequietepidemic.com. And people are also hosting screenings of the film to bring their communities together and with panel discussions to offer their communities resources and community, you know, that is resourced and Lyme literate in case they need it. So that's another way to get involved. But I'm there online. Our team, our little engine that could team is working hard behind the scenes. And yeah, we'll see where it goes.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, thank you for what you do. You know, just brought it to mind. I did a conference about 18 months ago, and one of the other speakers at the conference was a mom who'd lost her child to suicide from Lyme disease. And had this, you know, your story just as you were talking, it just came back in my mind, and how she just also didn't know what to do and didn't have the support, and her daughter couldn't take it. And she did go through, you know, and that's heartbreaking. So, you know, your story, what you're speaking about and what you're doing could save someone's life. So, yeah, absolutely. And whoever know, if anyone listening to this now knows of anyone who, or if you have the symptoms, whatever, reach out, find out more.
Yes.
And the more we stand together from on a grassroots level, the more one can make a change. So
absolutely.
Thank you once again.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. Till next time, everyone. I hope you found today's podcast interesting and helpful. If you want more tips and help with managing anxiety, depression, and mental health, be sure to visit my website at drleaf.com and to sign up for my weekly newsletter, where I also include a schedule of my speaking events and so much more. And follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Just look for Dr. Caroline Leaf. Also, I love seeing all your posts on social media about this podcast. I love seeing what resonates with you and what you've learned. So be sure to continue posting and tagging me and letting me know what you think and how these tips worked out for you. And don't forget, leave a review and keep spreading the word about this podcast. Thank you for joining me today. I really hope you learned something new and helpful. Till then, I'm Dr. Caroline Leaf. This podcast represents the opinions of myself and my guests. The content here should not be taken as medical advice. The content here is for educational and informational purposes only. Please consult your healthcare professional for any individual medical questions you may have. While we make every effort to ensure that the information we are sharing is accurate, we welcome any comments, suggestions, or corrections of errors.